Blog Talk Radio. Listening to Our Common Ground, it's Saturday night, open mic. I'll be listening for you. Having a wonderful fall Saturday and weekend. It is coming in New England. That's all I have to say. Here at Our Common Ground Saturday night open mic, we want you to know that our lines are open for you to set the stage. We do want to remind you that today we celebrate the 15th anniversary of the Million Man March, 15 years ago, and in our second hour tonight, we are going to revisit the Million Man March. But here in the first hour, we're going to be talking about talking black, being black, some of the solutions. Today at the Alpha Show and the Mo Alpha Show, there was a vigorous conversation and discussion on the issue of education. And one of the things that occurred to me during that conversation is that we all know what we need for our children. And so if you would like to just pick up the phone, bring your topic at 347-838-9852. We're hoping that you will set the stage here at Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, and we thank you for being with us tonight. Our number is 347-838-9852. I've got a lot of things on my mind, and I hope that you have come as part of the thought leadership of our community. We do want to recognize the anniversary of the assassinations of two black revolutionaries. Maurice Bishop was assassinated on October 19th in 1983, and Thomas Sankara on yesterday, October 15th, 1987. The assassination of Maurice Bishop effectively ended the Grenadian Revolution and the New Jewel Movement when 6 days after his death, U.S. forces under Ronald Reagan invaded that island. And for those of you who do not know what the Jewel Movement was, it was a joint endeavor for welfare, education, and liberation. And I am so proud that I was part of that organization, originally started in 1972 as a political movement centered on agricultural cooperatives. A year later, the New Jewel Movement was created, and Bishop Maurice Bishop became Prime Minister in Grenada in March 1979, and he was assassinated in a palace coup led by Deputy Prime Minister and childhood friend Bernard Cord. I happened to have been in Grenada at the time, and you probably can hear my voice cracking a little bit, at the time of his assassination and the coup. And if you don't have that as part of your black intelligence, we suggest that you do. This is Talk That Matters. Thank you, Rags and Twee 1968 and Yard Jockey for YJ for being for being in our chat room. And if you would like to join our chatters, you can do so at blogtalkradio.com/OCG. There's always such good conversation going on in our chat room. So we're talking about education. We're opening up our lines tonight to allow you to set the tone. There are lots of things going on in our world, and many of them have to do with us. Some of them do not, but education certainly does. And for those of you who are part of my generation, the Moses generation, it's sad to announce that Barbara Bigsley, who was June Cleaver in Leave It to Beaver, died at age 94 today. And that's an interesting tidbit. We also want to remind you that, you know, sometimes we can run behind things that are really distractions. And I'm beginning to believe that this absolute conversation, dialogue that we have going in our community around whether the Democrats should win, whether the Republicans should win, that we really ought to be looking at independent politics. We ought to be looking at independent empowerment education for our children. The issues continue to be the same, and it's simply because we have not acted on the solutions that we know will work. We have just simply acquiesce to whatever comes our way. And I want to talk about that tonight here at Our Common Ground. But first, let's set the tone. We have had many thought leaders, expositors. I call them the great black liberation expositors. And I want to feature one of them tonight and take a listen to what our black shining prince had to say.
We were brought here against our will. We were not brought here to be made citizens. We were not brought here to enjoy the constitutional gifts that they speak so beautifully about today. Because we weren't brought here to be made citizens today, now that we've become awakened to some degree and we begin to ask for those things which they say are supposedly for Americans, they look upon us with hostility and unfriendliness. If you're interested in freedom, you need some judo, you need some karate, you need all the things that will help you fight for freedom. Nationalism is the wave of the present and the future. It is nationalism that's bringing freedom to oppressed people all over the world. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the Algerians. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the Nigerians and to the Ghanaians. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the people of Uganda and Tanganyika and Sudan and Somaliland. The Africans didn't get it by sitting in. They didn't get it by waiting in. They didn't get it by singing, "We Shall Overcome." They got it through nationalism. And you and I will get it through nationalism. What is it? What is it that makes it difficult for the philosophy of nationalism to spread among the so-called Negroes? Number one, they think they have a stake in America. They think they have an investment in this country, which we do. We invested 310 years of slave labor, 310 years every day of which your and my mother and father worked for nothing. Not 8 hours a day. There was no union in that day. They worked from sun up until sundown. From can't see in the morning until can't see at night. They never had a day off. And on Sunday, they were allowed to sit down and sing about when they died, they wouldn't be slaves no more. When they died, they wouldn't be slaves no more. They'd go up in the sky, and every day would be Sunday. That's a shame. And it is that 310 years of slave labor that went in, that was my and your contribution into this particular economy and political system. They can give us the back pay. Let's join in. If this is what the Negro wants, let's join him. Let's show him how to struggle. Let's show him how to fight. Let's show him how to bring about a real revolution. Let's make him stop jiving. You don't need a debate. You don't need a filibuster. You need some action.
And I think very few of us would not agree that we do not need more agendas. We do not need external forces describing for us the priorities of our community. We do not need any more people, any more scholars telling us what our problems are. What we need is to get busy. To get busy and not worry about whether rapper T.I. is headed back to prison for being silly enough to break a federal probation order. We don't need any more distractions. Our number is 347-838-9852. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you all for being with us tonight.
You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run on.
Welcome to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, your host. Thank you for being with us tonight, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground, talk that matters.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the right of a human being, in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
And we do thank you all for being with us. And it's a wonderful time, a free time tonight on Saturday night, open mic, to talk about what's on your mind. And we want you to know that we welcome your calls. I'm Janice Graham, your host. And in our second hour tonight, we're going to be looking at the 15th anniversary of the Million Man March, and we'll go to our phones. 248, you're on the air. I respect you at Our Common Ground.
I'm only listening.
Oh, it's Navaksar. Navaksar, thank you for being with us tonight, and we look forward to Let's Talk tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. So I'll put you on mute. Thank you for being with us, ma'am.
Thank you.
For all of you who would like to join us in this conversation, let's look at education and the solutions. Let's look at, you know, there's a lot of talk about the dropout rate of African-American students in America. And my premise is that there aren't very many dropouts, but there are a lot of pushouts. How are we going to stop the tide of black children not appropriately being educated? And how do we tie new parenting strategies, new parenting intervention into that? Our number is 347-838-9852, 347-838-9852. I'd like to hear from you. I'm wondering if we give any real serious thought to the issue of whether or not, what is a good education, whether or not we give some serious thought to, as citizens, whether we have children or not, how the education of our children, the improvement and enhancement and effectivity of our school systems contribute to the health and the wealth of our own communities. I'm really wondering if many people who look at, who come to us on talk radio really are true and genuine activists, or whether it's not, whether or not we prepare our minds and walk in the maps of our minds simply in some self-interest way, not having any real understanding, not having any real commitment to our communities. It's interesting that when we want to talk about solutions that we know about, that we don't get any calls. Now, if I were talking about T.I. and how he talked some suicide, a suicide attempt down, we get lots of calls. If that's what you want to talk about, then I think it came to the wrong place. If you want to talk about how the Republicans have been so successful in beating down this president, there are some underbelly issues to that that we need to talk about. We need to talk about how we elected a president and left him to fend for himself. Because the same kinds of demands that we put on this president, we're not putting on our own community. We're not putting on ourselves individually. 347-838-9852. We've got a president who we elected. And when we're not getting what we need, we are sitting back and blaming him rather than looking at our own shortcomings in how we engage in the public square. When progressives were vehement against the war in Vietnam, there wasn't a day that there wasn't a huge protest in Washington in front of the White House. There wasn't a day when we went to Iraq that there was a huge protest in front of the White House. There wasn't a major protest of any kind against 8 years of a continuing and progressive oppression against American people, where the rich was getting richer and the poor was getting poorer, and we were saying nothing. You're listening to Our Common Ground at 347-838-9852. I believe I've been joined by my co-host, Alpho. Good evening, Alpho. Thank you for coming on.
Good evening, Janice, and good evening to everyone and all of those in the chat.
Do you have a note? I want to know if you have a note.
My great-grandson took it, and he bought it up.
And he ate it. Your dog ate it, and then your great okay. Alpho, you had some good talk going on today, and, you know, I'm kind of closing my eyes and saying that we're blaming everything on other people. We're blaming the miseducation, the undereducation, the failed education of our children on other people.
Well,
if we behave as though we don't pay taxes, we behave as though we don't have a stake in education, but we want to sit around 7 days a week and talk to talk show hosts about solutions that we never turn around. You know, we're going to be talking about the Million Man March in the second hour, Alpha. And one of the reasons that the Million Man March failed was that it was national and there was no national platform. It was only a national platform. There were organizations who went back locally to try to invoke some of the commitment made at that march, and nobody showed up. Alpha, we've got a board full, and I'm committed to letting people set the tone of the show tonight because it is Saturday night, open mic, and we're going to go right to the phones. But I'm glad to have you with us. 480, we're right at you. I respect you on our common ground. How are you this evening, and where are you?
This is Carol. I'm in Mesa, Arizona. How you doing?
Carol, how are you? Hope that my sister.
I'm good. I had to figure out how to use you guys' system thing, so it took me a while. But I'm here.
That's okay.
And
I'm glad you're here.
And what's on my mind is, like, I wanted to piggyback on what you were saying about the president and how we rallied around him. And now it's like it does seem to me that there's a lot of blame being placed on him to create change in less than how many months is it? Well, almost 2 years. And as far as our black community, I don't see anything that we've done. And what I understood Obama to have said was, we are the change that we've been looking for. So I was rallied up and ready to go, you know. But then when you reach out to other blacks, there's this feeling or a spirit, I'm going to say, of either just despair or indifference, or really I don't know how to really categorize it or label it. And it's disturbing to me. And it's been all these months, and I'm here in Arizona where I'm seeing Hispanics who were affected by the law and how blacks are not rallying around to support them, because in my mind I'm thinking, you know, who's next, you know. And mm-hmm. I'm at a loss. On a personal level, as to, you know, exactly what solutions can be done to rally us. I was just talking on Facebook with someone earlier today about, and she was saying that people of color are always, almost always ready. But I don't see that we're ready. I see different people doing different things in different segments. But as a whole, if you look at the Tea Party and how they've rallied around each other, I'm not feeling that from us. And
yes,
we are the
change. You're
absolutely
right. And let me try to stop you at one point.
Okay.
And that point is that what we miss in our thinking and how we are approaching the president and his administration is this. There was nowhere, and there was everywhere, in his campaign when he was very clear that he would respond to the demands of the American people.
Right.
That he could not make this change unless we demanded it. And in
exactly.
my mind, I think you're absolutely right. We have not demanded it. We have not demanded it. I mean, we can't say that because Reverend Al Sharpton, who I have known for many, many years, that Reverend Al Sharpton going to the White House is our demand. That is not our demand. Until
no.
we are in front of the White House demanding.
Right.
You know, and this whole notion of what the Tea Party and the Republicans and the neocons are pushing down our throats, we have not pushed back.
No.
We want to hold Bernie Sanders and Feingold, and we have not. I mean, one of the reasons I featured Brother Malcolm tonight is because he made it so very clear that whatever the Congress does, we can't indict an individual. We have to indict the institution.
Exactly.
And that institution includes everybody.
Right.
If John Kerry is not on national news talking about black progressive reform in education, he's not serving my interest.
Right.
So you're absolutely right. And one of the things that was so wonderful about the Obama campaign, was so wonderful about Jesse Jackson's 1984 rise towards the presidency, is because it ejected us out of our stupor. But as soon as this man was the vilification of the president, you know, Cornel West says that it's one thing to criticize the president, but it's another to disrespect the president.
Exactly.
And they're disrespecting him because we have not supported him and put him in a position where we respect him. And it's the same thing in our local communities, Carol.
Right. Negrotized
the politics in our local communities. So progressive black thought, progressive black politics can never break through the barriers, the impediments. We don't do an analysis of impediments. I don't see anybody across this country, any black organization anywhere indicting their local school board.
No. And it's
and
almost
that
like
is
if
where we have to be.
So how do we empower each other then? That's the thing. Because the talk is, when you know, people complain about it, but then there's no solution as to how we're going to resolve it. And how do we empower each other to the point where we can rally together and promote this change? That's,
you know, on October 22nd, the new Black Panther Party is going to be celebrating its anniversary. We have every body of work to educate our community. But where are we spending our dollars?
Right.
Where are we spending our disposable dollars? You know, I happen to be a person who receives every damn invitation to every damn dinner, every damn lunch, every damn break the ribbon or whatever. I don't do any of those things, and I make it very clear to my sorority, to the organizations that I hold my membership in, until you do right by this community,
exactly.
I will not be there. I will
That's
not. How in the hell can any community in this country be honoring black people when black children are dying mentally, physically, and we are all seething in poverty? How the hell can that be? The BET Awards, the NAACP Awards, the nobody is effectively achieving anything or making contributions large enough to get any damn award. There should be a moratorium on all kinds of awards
I
until we get
with
it
that,
right.
Totally. Yeah.
Carol, I've got to go to some other calls, but I'm so glad to have you with me tonight. For those of you who are listening, if you'd like to join us in the chat room, our chat room is at blogtalkradio.com/OCG, and thank you so much for being with us. We're going to go to 248. Good evening. You're on the air. I respect you at our common ground. That's in the Voxer. 405, I respect you. Good evening. You're on the air with Alpha and Janice Graham at our common ground.
Hello, Alpha, and hello, Janice.
Don, how are you?
Don. I'm good. Thank you. Good to hear from you tonight.
Well, you
what's
know,
on your mind?
I'll tell you what's on my mind. I can understand the indifference and the frustration that Carol has stated. And I would say that when we look at what's happened to us, we did not get our fair share of the pie. And I'm talking about going back to the beginning of emancipation. We have been no
other... So you want to talk about reparations?
I call it restitution.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I call it restitution, Janice, because when a person has been harmed as we have been harmed, when we have been so mistreated, and when the maldistribution of wealth has occurred to us, planned by this government and those in power, I'm not coming with head in hand asking for reparations to repair. I'm asking for a restitution to correct the wrong that has been perpetrated on us throughout the centuries. And when you talk about restitution, that's a modern-day term where they can understand. When you say reparations, you get a stigma that's attached to reparations, like you're coming with head in hand, asking the power structure to give you something for nothing, which is a stereotypical approach to reparations. Yes, I'm for reparations, but I want to put it in the context of you owe me. I'm not asking for
nothing.
Well,
I think reparations are in the context of you owe me. The contemporary movement toward reparations is certainly that. I think that it's a combination of repairing and repaying.
Yes.
So I do, but I think you're also right that there is a stigma attached.
You know,
that's just in our community.
Well, that's just me speaking personally, Janice. I understand the old concept of reparations, and I agree with it, but I'm just talking about me. I'm talking about Don, you know, so, and when you put it in the context of the maldistribution of wealth, that's where we made our first mistake. We did not demand an equal portion of the economic opportunities, the economic plan to empower ourselves as a people. We wanted to go and socialize and integrate into this system without any power, such as money and land and resources behind us, to the extent where it could not be taken away by a government, such as what happened after we have been freed. And so the government is very much at fault for the condition in which our people find ourselves and the level of frustration that exists among us today. We're simply manifesting the lack of opportunities. We're manifesting the lack of jobs, the lack of education, the lack of attention that's owed to our people for the legacy that we have in this country. And so when I put it in that context, then I can understand why we end up frustrated. We have a president that cannot get too much accomplished, although he did accomplish some major things. He accomplished some things no other president has ever accomplished, such as his health care, to get that established in some form. Given the opposition that he has against him, not only from the Republicans and from these so-called Tea Party folk who are an extended branch of the Republican Party, but also from his own Democratic Party and his base. And because they do, they're looking for some type of instant gratification, which is the type of life that we live in this country now. Our youth and the youth that's coming up now never had to stand in line and be told that you're second place, be told that you have to drink out of this water faucet, be told that you have to go to this show, be told that you can't cross this line unless you have a rake on your back or some working implement. And so they have not fully understood, and we have not taught them our legacy of slavery and the price that was paid by those who have come before us, and the price that is necessary to be paid now in order for us to sustain some type of...
Can I lose Don?
Huh?
Don, are you still there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Can
you
hear
me?
I can hear you, Don.
Okay.
Dennis?
So let me get back to what I'm saying here. You know, we have not been fully compensated for, and we have not taught our young our very important legacy of what it took in order and the price that was paid in order for them to be around in the condition that they are in. Even though it's sad, there's still opportunities out here, and we have to show them the opportunities, and we have to be the example ourselves.
Don, let's try to bridge that to Carol's concerns. How do you bridge between you and I, Alpha and some others in our audience, are the last of the Jim Crow generation? How do we begin to, as you stated, how important it is for the Joshua generation to understand from where they came, from where we have come, from what sacrifices we have made, so that they can participate in a very different way than the opportunities that we had to participate were formed? How do we do that? How do we begin to get our community to understand, to come out of the mentality of oppression that gets them to understand that we are still owed?
Well, Dennis, to that argument, Don.
I think we keep losing Don for some reason.
Yeah, he's indicated
Don,
he's been disconnected.
Feel free to call back.
He's indicated he's been disconnected. Janice, to that, the young Joshua generation, they seem to be unable to recognize, as we are unable to fully explain how important their history is and how important or how much people have suffered and how much people have gone through. They seem to be just blind, oblivious to their own history, because history is not something that is one of those quick rewards. It takes a lot to really sit down and understand that we are old, that we do not profit or enhance ourselves with inherent wealth or with privilege. And never having had that, all they can say about when we try to explain it to them, they seem to be at some type of indifference. It's not like there's something that they want to hear or it's something that they want to embrace or even recognize. And I think that has a lot to do with what they are, I would say, what they are entertained with. They pay more attention to, you know, the distractions, the be it mm-hmm. on television, be it, you know, in our churches, or be it what they see on, you know, from the media.
But let me transpose this for a minute. The Malcolm X Grassroots Network has been doing work on reparations. And for those of you who are listening and you don't understand the issue of reparations, I recommend that one of the things that you do is read Dr. Raymond Winbush, who was with us week before last, his book, Why America Must Pay. Because it is very, very important to understand the language of reparations and restitution. The other part of it is that, and Alpha, I'm laying this right at our feet. We have not been aggressive. We have not been clear about our fear of the reparation movement. I mean, there are black people who are ashamed that we would even ask. Now, what does that tell you? That tells me, and it goes back to a number of shows that I have done at Our Common Ground on the issue of post-slavery traumatic disorder. That's what it goes back to. So the sad part of it, you know, it's almost like trying to rebuild the family after sexual molestation or incest has occurred in the family. But until we get past the point, until we break through and really embrace the notion that we have been harmed to the extent that we have given labor in the building of this country, and then you filter in, Alpha, this whole notion of people really don't know black history. They really don't understand the value of what slave labor, Jim Crow labor, legal discrimination and segregation lent itself to in the economy of this country. You know, one of the reasons that I always try to bring it down to where we can kind of feel it in our bones, and we're going to have to take a break, but we invite your calls at 347-838-9852. But if we do not understand the contribution that we made throughout the history of our presence on these shores, then I guess we are a little bit shame of the word reparation, a little bit shame of a lot of things. You get me, Alpha?
I understand what you're saying, Janice. I completely agree with it. However, when you say We have not learned our history. And as the generations progress, it becomes even less and less.
Yeah, and that's part of the issue that Don brought up. How in the hell can you teach somebody history and you don't know it?
Well,
you don't believe it.
Yeah. You know, once...
I mean, one of the things that you never hear black people talking about is the way in which poverty lends itself to ignorance. But we spend an awful lot of time talking about them ignorant black people. Get me?
I understand.
I don't usually say things like get me, but I like saying it to you, Alpha.
Well, Janice, not only do I get it, but, you know, I come to understand that when we haven't created that atmosphere that our history is should be a priority. And I, in coming up, when I came up, just as when you came up, the notion of the teaching of Black history was a serious threat to the culture, to the culture of white supremacy, because knowing that the teaching of our Black history would empower more and more African Americans to know their heritage, to know where they come from. So they, what did they do? They began to whittle it down until it's basically non-existent. Right now, non-existent. In many of our schools, in many of the curriculums that are taught from high school, from grammar school, you don't see it in grammar school. You don't see it in high schools. So you will never see it again in college.
But let me tell you where you should see it. You should see it coming out of the organizations that we fund. You should see it coming out of after-school programs. You know, one of the things that was happening across this nation at the end of the 60s and all the way through the 70s were freedom academies in church basements, in all kinds of places across our country. And then we decided we wanted some more. And my question that I want to hear from you about, 347-838-9852, is why we are not using Freedom Academies to teach our children the real deal in this country. I'm Janice Graham, and I have with me my co-host, Alpha of the Alpha Show, and we'll be right back.
You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked. Bamboozled. Let us pray. Run on my.
Frankie, what's happening?
Yeah, man, look here. Something funky is going down, man.
What do you mean something funky going down?
Oh, man, I'm over here working. Funky is going down. Look here.
You know, what this whole thing is about is delegitimizing the presidency of Barack Obama. It's the same with the birther movement, and it's the same with the teabaggers. They can't accept, much tolerate, the fact that a Democrat and a black one at that won the presidency. So they're intent on doing whatever they can to tear this presidency down. This is what Obama's up against, and the sooner he realizes it, the better.
Violence against women doesn't discriminate.
Every 15 seconds, a woman in the U.S. becomes a victim of domestic violence.
60% of men who abuse women also
abuse children.
If you or someone you know is a victim of domestic violence,
call Safe Horizon at 1-800-621-4673.
Please call.
Yeah.
you're listening to Our Common Ground. It's Saturday night, open mic. I'll be listening for you.
And we thank you for being here with us at Our Common Ground Saturday night open mic. And Alpha, we're going to go right to our phones. Don seems to be back. Don, thank you for calling back. We're glad to have you back.
Okay, thank you, Janice. I'll continue and I'll be brief because I know there's other callers that want to get in and express their opinion on this most important topic. I think that we need to direct our attention to our youth, our children, and you know, it's up to us to get it. We can be steered or sort of led in the right direction, but we must have within ourselves, we must recognize the opportunity when it presents itself. You and I don't know, we came up in a generation to where we knew that we could not expect anything from anyone. We didn't have the welfare systems like we have today. We didn't have the family division that we face today in our communities. And so we knew that we had, if we wanted to get anything, especially black men, we knew that we had to get out there and hustle. The old word, hustle. And through by any means necessary. See, I came up during the Malcolm X era. I came up during the Martin Luther King era. I am a senior citizen, but I had to go through things on my own. I never depended on anyone necessarily to get me started. Now, there was a lot of people that helped me along the way once they recognized that I was worth some type of investment, and especially my own extended family. Well, all of those things have changed. We live in a different generation. We live in an era of technology. It's just like my child, my grandchildren. We're giving them music lessons. We're making sure that they play instruments and learn math and learn music to where they can have more tools in their tool chest when they get out and begin to work and compete in this world. And when we went to one of my little granddaughter's concerts, most of the people in the concert there that was taking the lessons and was in the show were people from India, the Indian children. See, so that's what they do. They rally around their communities just like Hispanic. I'm not so much concerned as Carol was saying about, well, you know, the Hispanics and we didn't help them necessarily, but in the La Raza Charter, the National Council of Latin American Citizens, LULAC, there's no room there, there's no language there for them to come to our aid. They have their own communication, they have their own community, and they're tied together by their culture and their language. And I think that's what's been our problem. We've always had this umbrella approach to trying to get ahead by wanting to socialize and include every so-called minority under the umbrella of equal opportunity, and let's help one another. And the only thing it's helped was them to leapfrog ahead of us, and now we're in fourth place in this country, and we're standing back scratching our head wondering, now what happened? So we need to focus upon our condition first. We need to ensure that we are trying to homeschool our kids, even though they go to school. Let's get that homework. Let's review it. If we can't, let's pay some tutors like we do for any other type of instruction. It costs for us to pay our kids, for our grandkids to go to music classes. Well, we may have to pay somebody to teach them what they need to teach. Or organizations, but you can't even depend on these organizations now because all of these organizations that's allegedly for our purpose, to benefit our purpose, are big business, just like the big churches. They're big business now. So there's no individual, and they have also jumped in bed right along with Caesar. It's not rendered to Caesar what Caesar has due. Everybody's on the bandwagon and jumped in bed with Caesar. So it comes right back down to the family structure, what's left, what's there. We must each one reach one, each one teach one. That's what we must do.
Well, you see, I think, Don, you have to put it in, you have to put it in the context of community. Community is family. And that is a concept that we have gotten away from. If we saw community as family, then there would be, with all the musicians, all the artists, with all the teachers, administrators, educators that we have in our community, those would be people that we have at work calling for the big reform, calling and working on the blueprint. But we are not organizing at the community level. We are so tuned into what I have, what I need, what I want, that community gets left behind. And I'm simply saying that we're never going to get anywhere if we continue to allow the people who are policymakers in our community to uphold the status quo. A wonderful word is we have got to collaborate at the moral level, at the physical level, because our health communities are not delivering culturally sensitive medical products. We've got to make there should not be a black lawyer in any black community who is not working on issues of justice, issues of what happens in our courts, issues of what happens in our legal system, our judicial system, in our interests, who should be successful.
Well, we have no community.
You know what white people do? You know what the Chamber of Commerce does when they have members who don't work in their interests? They ostracize, isolate, and destroy them.
Yes, but see, my problem is this. I don't see our community. I see our community has been destroyed. We've destroyed our community here in Oklahoma by setting it up on fire in Tulsa. We destroyed it in Florida. It's been burnt down. As of late, urban renewal has divided our community with freeways and things like that of such. And now we have the influx of immigration, of those who's coming here that are not citizens here, that's taking advantage of all of the social programs that we should have been entitled to. What we have now are neighborhoods. And of black people, neighborhoods, and we're being pushed out of some of the neighborhoods that we live in. That sense of community that we once talked about is no longer there. Our leadership, so-called leadership, does not demonstrate their intents and purposes are to bring us together in a cohesive manner. How many marches have we had by these different organizations? How many more marches do we need, or is it going to take? We have to be our own leadership. We have to decide that we know within ourselves, we need to plan on what kind of legacy am I going to leave to my children. My father and I, he's 87 years old. We talk together and we talk about things and we talk about his legacy. And he tells me, Don, I want to ensure that I leave something to you that will make your life a little bit better than it was for me. So when he passes and when I come into the into his inheritance, then I intend to invest what would little it may be, because a lot to them may be little to us. So whatever we have there, we need to invest it in our children, and we need to ensure that we leave them the type of legacy that the power structure and the dominant people of race in this country have for 15 to 20 generations through insurances and everything else, passed down generational wealth. We have to understand that concept.
Well, I understand that concept, but I also understand that unless we're talking to other people in our community and educating them, for instance, we have seniors who really don't understand where black people are and where we've been because they're too busy trying to survive. We have parents who are too busy trying to survive, and those are the people for those of us who know, and we know that we know, those are the people we've got to reach out to. I've got about 5 minutes for this segment, Don. Thank you so much. Very cogent, very insightful, and very deep thought. Thank you so much.
Hey,
and we're going to
thank you, Don.
248. You're
Navajo.
On the air. I respect you.
That's Navajo.
Hello.
That's Navajo.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, Alpha, Don is bringing up some stuff that we have really got to work on. And one of the things that we do is inside our soul, we feel the pain, we feel the injury, we know that it is there, and some of us have been able to overcome and begin the healing process on an individual basis. But we've got so many people out there who they're hurting, and they don't even know what they're hurting from. And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Million Man March. Where are we now, and just what happened? I'm Janice Graham, and Alpha of the Alpha Show is my co-host tonight on this Saturday night open mic. We'll be right back.
Common Ground, Saturday night open mic. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Something inside me just won't let me. Something inside me just won't let me. Something wrong. Something inside me.
Wake up the entire African American community to the hidden issue of mental health.
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends, and we've been friends for over 30 years.
One story at a time.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing in a journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing.
If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
You're listening to Truth Works Now.
Are you looking for the serious side of talk radio? Join us at Truth Works Network here at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and there you will find the finest of Black voices on the Internet. Truth Works Network, a Black voice collaborative. On demand and in demand. Truth Works Network. Sign up for the Our Common Ground newsletter where you'll be kept in the loop at TruthWorks Network and Our Common Ground. OurCommonGround-talk.ning.com. That's where you'll find us. Just sign up. I'm Janice Graham, and I come here to speak truth to power and ourselves. Race Talk is what we do, in courage and with hope. I'll be listening for you.
And we thank you for being with us here tonight. You know, during the break, Alpha, I was thinking about some of the things that Don was saying, and it really does speak to the points that Cal made. And that is, and I continue to have this concept of a bridge, that we've got to bridge the generations, we've got to bridge people in our communities. It is said, and it is true, that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning is the most segregated time in this nation each week. And it is a real opportunity, but one of the things that we have allowed to happen is something that we've been talking about here at Our Common Ground for a couple of weeks, and that is the notion of prosperity ministry, to drown out the traditional and very rich tradition of the black church as part of a black liberation theology. So those are the kinds of impediments. And I still have this thought that we ought to be having freedom academies. It costs nothing to spend an hour a week with black children. It costs nothing. You go to your I mean, this is the way it starts. This is the way the civil rights movement started. This is the way the black power movement started. This is the way the Jewel movement started. This is the way that it happens. You go to the church or the community center in your neighborhood, and you say, look, I'm willing to spend some time teaching black history, concepts of black culture, an African-centered way of thinking about the way we live and the institutions in which we live our lives. It costs nothing to do that, Alpha. Nothing. And that is how you begin. And once you begin to do that, then you go to some of these black organizations in your community that are doing nothing and saying, this is what I'm doing as an individual. Would you like to come along for the ride? Then you contact the key political individuals in your community having to do with education, our neighborhoods. You know, the simple act of cleaning up in front of your own house, whether you are a renter or a homeowner, is an act of revolution for our community. It is a model of revolution for to just, in your block, organize all the kids and say, we're going to pick up all the cans, we're going to pick up all the liquor bottles, the trash, we're going to sweep, and maybe we can go to a Home Depot and beg them for some free flowers to put in some of these places. It takes nothing to do that.
Or even plant the seeds.
Alpha, it takes nothing.
Or even plant the seeds for flowers to grow.
Exactly.
We don't need to get the flowers itself. All we need is the seeds. That way we can plant 10, you know, and tend to it, you know, ourselves. That in itself is
exactly
a learning experience. But, you know, Janice, you mentioned, you know, these, I still believe, I firmly believe that our black churches should not only be teaching the word of the Bible and of the Lord, they should also be teaching us and teaching people, once they have you gathered there and once they have your attention, they should also be teaching that same entity of community and self.
Mm-hmm. And self-love.
And black history. Just black history
in and
of itself.
And having people to understand. You know, so much of the theology that is taught in the black church is about reliance on some hierarchical system to save us, when in fact, it's my humble opinion, coming out of a lifetime of AMEism, that it is about self-help. It is about the God in you. It is about how to build a life around kindness and giving rather than a reliance upon somebody else is going to do something and that is how you're going to get involved. So it's a lot of things. We're in our second hour and you're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, your host. And our co-host is Alpha of the Alpha Show, and you can catch him every Saturday at Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. and Reload with Alpha at 4 p.m. on TruthWorks Network. We thank all of you for being with us here tonight. Our number is 347-838-9852. And in this, for the remainder of the time, our lines are open. This is Saturday night, open mic. But for right now, we're going to talk about the Million Man March. 15 years ago today, more than a million men and their families and their loved ones and this community gathered on the Mall in Washington, D.C., and took a pledge. Every man present took a pledge. I am a witness. And here is what they pledged.
Take this pledge with me. Say with me, please. I. Say your name. Pledge that from this day forward, I will strive to love my brother as I love myself. I. Say your name. From this day forward, politically, and economically, for the benefit of myself, my family, and my people. I, say your name, pledge that I will strive to build business, build houses, build hospitals, build factories, international trade for the good of myself, my family, and my people. I, say your name, pledge that from this day forward, world for sexual gratification. But I will let them grow in peace to be strong men and women for the future of our people.
Listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. We'll be right back.
And Alphabet, there you have it.
That was amazing.
There you have it.
You know, that...
Hello?
And from what he... was the pledge that he put forth, as you said, you know, what went wrong? That they all simply leave the march and go back to what they were doing, feeling that mission had been accomplished simply by showing up.
You know, I don't think that people took the pledge out of a place of artificiality. I don't think that the millions of people who came to Washington, D.C. that weekend, I know that I watched. I was halfway the mall, and I watched men taking this pledge. And I will tell you that there were tears because the minister, the brother minister, was tapping into the real need of the people who were there, of our community. And no one can deny that 15 years ago today, that was one of the most important historical moments in this country. And that men came back. I mean, I know 5 men who I knew that were there came back naked and made the commitment to become very active in the Boston Big Brother, Big Sister program. I know men who went back to their communities, and what they did was to begin to sincerely make an effort to create an infrastructure to fulfill the pledge of stopping the violence, stopping the killing, stopping the drugs, putting an end to the consistent and continuous path of young black boys going to prison, of fixing our schools and fixing our communities. But one of the reasons I think that it did not hold is because they began programs that were contradictory to the infrastructure already in place by people who want to get awards. Now, that's one reason. The other reason is the disconnect. We'd like to hear your response to where we are since the Million Man March. Our number is 347-838-9852. I never thought that the Million Man March Alpha was designed for the organizers of the march to do more than to raise the community thinking about itself, as House Music Lover in the chat room is saying, in its intent to raise a community people to another level. But I don't think that the organizers had in mind that it was their responsibility to ensure that across this nation it was happening, that the commitment was being fulfilled, that people would go back and do something differently. And I think that was true about the Million Women's March in Philadelphia, which I also attended, to try to get people to hear and see themselves in the context of their community. And Cal brought up a very important point, and it is that we have to turn, and Don did as well, we have to turn the tide on the level, the capacity of people to hear the truth. And I want people out there who in our audience to really stick with us till the end, because I prepared a clip for going out tonight that I think that it brings home my point. One of the things that one of our guests said last year on this program was that when Martin Luther King spoke the truth, part of the problem was that we didn't have the capacity to hear it. It has taken us almost 12 years to understand the notion of the prison industrial complex. It didn't just start yesterday, or it didn't just start when President Obama was elected. That started 15 years ago. The poverty that we see in our country, in our community, the failure of our educational system didn't start 2 years ago. It started 15 years ago. And, you know, one of the things you were talking about on your show today with one of your callers was the notion that, and I chime in on this notion, that America has abandoned its schools. It abandoned the concept of public education. And in our community, we have abandoned the concept of community. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, Janice, certainly, you know, earlier this afternoon, you know, when you came on and you spoke about the truth, the reality of the history of public schooling and how it was abandoned as soon as it became desegregated, and the way this country and the leaders in this country simply turned their back on the importance of public education, and it shifted to, as we saw, the white flight, because it had been desegregated. And we saw the shifting from the importance of public education to private education and private institutions doing what had already been started and was basically successful, because the rise of private institutions was non-existent until civil rights began and the desegregation of the schools.
Yep.
And when you brought home that point, there will always be, and there was, someone articulating their disbelief, their frustration with the continuance of raising the truth, though that issue of what happened. And, you know, you have people who are really committed to every time someone raises the history of this country and the ugly of this country, they want to simply say, oh, there you go again. That's like the same people who will say they still blaming Bush. They still blame Hitler. And I'll say that over.
Yeah.
I repeat that to everyone who makes that claim about they're still blaming Bush.
Yeah.
Just like
the perpetrator is always the perpetrator.
Exactly.
We've
they've
call
always
at
taking away affirmative action. You know, affirmative action was so vilified by a chorus of whites who simply saw it as a threat. If we give them equality, if we make up for the injustice, somehow that injustice is an injustice on whites. And that's the tone, that's the battle cry that they enter.
That's how white supremacy works. But let's go to our caller. 497, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
How you doing, Janice? This is Jay Early.
How you doing, Jay?
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Alpha.
I'm
always glad to hear your voice. Janice, I'm a first-time visitor to your show, and I'm very glad I found you. I woke up and was looking for something to listen to, and it looks like I'm at the right place. Because I've been pushing your theme for a while here. In fact, we did a show a while back, which was called "Who Dropped the Ball After Martin Luther." You know, the problems that you brought out earlier about the community ties right into what you just said about the Million Man's March. You know, it seems that it is that. That showing of unity left right after the event stopped. I mean, everybody got back in the buses, got back on the trains, planes, and went back home, and there was no course of action to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it ended up being
a beautiful speech. You know, and this is a problem that we've been facing for years, and I don't have the solution. In fact, I'm starting a series, to try to find out what the solutions are, because we all talk about the problems. You know, I have a program starting next Sunday, and I hope it runs for a long time. It's called "Who's Got Solutions for the Problems in Black America, Part One." You know, so. You're on the right track, and I hope you continue to go. And I know Alpha's a fighter.
I've been broadcasting, Jay, since 1985, doing Our Common Ground on terrestrial radio, and I came on internet radio just about a year ago this month. Let me say this. We do know what some solutions are. The problem is that we don't press into the bureaucracy hard enough. I think that what happened at the Million Man March, it's human nature that when you find resistance, you either fold or you continue to push ahead. And most people who are doing this as part of their life's work as opposed to part of their professional work will fold because they don't have time to fight the power. So one of the things I think, one of the solutions, it has to be a process. And one of the things is like building a house. You got to clear the land before you put in the foundation. So you have to clear the land. When I say that, at a local level, that means to put everybody on notice. Your local politicians, your school board, your city council or town council, or the people who say that they represent the interests of their community, you have to put them on notice. You will change, get out of the way, or you will be destroyed in this image that you call activism. That's what they did to President Obama. That's what they're doing to the Democratic Party. They are clearing the land. They cleared the land. And they're building, and the foundation is the Tea Party.
Yes, I agree with that 100%. But now you also mentioned something else. I can't remember if it was you or Alpha a few minutes ago about the church, okay, and the part of the church in this. You know, in other words, you have to have an organization that starts locally, that starts in the community. I say that you start with your block. You were mentioning about cleaning, you know, in front of your house. Okay, I say you start with your block, move to your community,
absolutely,
to your state, and then to your nation. You know, and it's a possibility. Maybe we have to do it one city at a time. Take one city and set it up as an example. But the one thing that we have to learn to do, and no one can do this for us, is that we have to learn how to work together. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you think
mm-hmm.
about it, we are the only race that doesn't stick together. We're the only
mm-hmm.
race that's out
mm-hmm.
there shooting and killing each other. And,
oh,
and I mean, it's insane.
We're also the only race that spent 300 years in slavery. And the
yes, but
injuries
being
that
we should not be killing each other because we were in slavery. It should be pulling us more together, not pulling us apart. You know, people get mad when I go back into the 60s and I talk about the fact that back then a young girl 10 years old, at I don't care if it was 9 o'clock at night, she could run around the corner to the grocery store and she'd get back in one piece. And when I talk about that's what we need to work back to, meaning the safety factor, people say, well, you can't do that. Well, yes, you can. Okay? People have lost the fact that you get what you speak. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go to the Bible, but you understand exactly what I'm talking about. You get what you speak
mm-hmm.
out of your
mm-hmm.
mouth. You have to set the vibes going. But at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you have to have a plan of action, which starts, number one, in us wanting to work with each other, in us not being
mm-hmm.
jealous when one of us succeeds. When I say succeeds, end up with a little better job than the person next door. Now, I must say this, because this is very important. You know, I live in Europe. I've lived here for 40 years, okay? And the one thing that I noticed over here, I'm in Germany, and don't think there's not prejudice in Germany because they're darn sure.
Oh, absolutely.
It has gotten better. When I got here, the victims, though, were the Turkish people, the Italian people that were bought into Germany after World War II to help build it. Now, they are the country. Because of, you know, having babies, the population increased in such a way that in any neighborhood, the neighborhoods are not segregated like they are in America. Okay, when I look out my door, I've got a builder, an architect living across the street. Okay, I have a postman living next door. Okay, I have another guy that works for the city, is picking up trash, lives down the street. You live where your money affords you to be, and this is what's not in America.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm.
And these are things that have to be changed. But again, I'm gonna go back to what you said about cleaning the house. What does it take? The effort to, you know, as I think it was Alpha said, put some new seeds down. Okay, fix
mm-hmm.
up your neighborhood and then move on. But we
mm-hmm,
have
mm-hmm.
to learn.
And the
to
thing
work
is
together.
That we have to get comfortable with everyone in our community. When I come out of a store in one of the strip malls in the city, I live in the city of Boston.
Right.
And there are a group of teenage boys. I don't make assumptions about who they are. I speak to them. If they're misbehaving, I might even say something to them. You know, we have got to get comfortable with who we are, and who we are is not just what you see in the mirror. Understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
We cannot, I hear what you're saying. We cannot continue to think that we are not the people who will determine our destiny.
You know, we are, and you know, this is what I hear this all the time, and I believe this in my heart, that black people are very proud people.
Yes.
We have to show our proudness, okay? And like I said, you got
to
remember, I grew up
question,
in the 60s,
Jay.
All right, and we showed it. I remember the day that you wouldn't leave a house unless your jeans were pressed, okay? And it starts right there. It starts with dress. I mean, yeah, I know you've probably heard the expression dress for success.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a very well-known thing in business. Well, it's the same thing because when you dress up and you feel good, I mean, you look good, then you feel good. And that goes from your dress to your neighborhood to your house.
But until we get comfortable in working with what we have to work with, that's a big concern in urban centers. We think that we can do community activism and exclude the kids with the do-rags and the 10 feet of weave hanging out the heads. We cannot do the work without working with the people we're working for. We cannot continue to minimize, marginalize, and exclude them. We have to, one, understand our own history, and two, understand everybody else's history. We
may
are
I make
not
a
living
suggestion?
In an age, pardon me?
I said, may I make a suggestion?
Recruit
the hip-hop community.
Exactly.
And the reason I say that is because you remember, when you go as far as dress is concerned, MTV and hip hop had a big influence on the dress of young people, or has a big influence on the dress of young people. So if you can recruit them and get them into the movement, okay, I think you will see some changes more rapidly, because then you've got that TV exposure, so to speak.
But see,
so the music
Jay,
industry could help the cause a whole lot.
Those are secondary things. What they have in their head is more important than what they wear on their heads. If you can get the adults in our community, the church people in our community, to embrace their own dignity and history, then I think that you will see fewer young boys walking around with baggage, with their pants in their knees or whatever it is. You'll see fewer young girls believing that sexually servicing someone who is exploiting you is beneath your dignity. That's where we've got to get to. And then begin to deal with all of the, I mean, you know, Haki Madhubuti, who is a publisher and a writer in Chicago, teaches at the University of Chicago, he says it so plain, and for those of you who would like to read, I suggest, my recommendation is you read some of the works of Haki Madhubuti. Single men, you know, I got a chemo brain, so it's Single Men is one of his titles, Black, Single, and something else, Jay. I can't think of it right now.
I'll Google it in.
one of the things that that Haki has always said is that our children see what we do. James Baldwin said it, that our children will not listen to us, but they will mimic us. And as long as we are allowing the exploitation and the continuous destruction in our community, then that's, our children will watch us with our palms up smiling in the face of our destructors and say nothing. And that is why our children have no respect for our standards. Did you Google it, Jay? Because I hope that people will take a look. His name is...
If you spell his name for me, I'm on Google right now.
It's Haki Ma, M-H-A, Booty, B-U-T-I. Free World Press. But, Jay, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I think that we do have the solutions. We know that in our community, when children are failing, that they are failing simply for a very simple reason, simply because they missed a step. Some teacher along the way allowed them to slip by and not learn the phonetics. So they, by the time they get to eighth grade, they can't read. We know that. We know that black boys do well until they're in the fourth grade, and something begins to happen. And what begins to happen is that they become an endangered species because the people who are in charge of their lives in our schools begin to be afraid of them because those people buy into the stereotypical myths that are passed along by media about our children. We know that black girls begin to fail at the eighth grade level because, as my mother would say, they eat too many McDonald's because their hormones are running crazy. But we know that they begin to fail because that is the age in which girls begin to compete with women and begin to think, if you aren't with me, you are against me. So there are a lot of variables. You know, for instance, Jay, I've never understood. Alpha, I've never understood. Don, I've never understood why we have children in our school systems who essentially have no parents. Their parents are drug addicted, brain dead, disabled, and they come into our communities, in our schools, they're disruptive, they're failing, and they should be the ones who are in boarding schools that have 24-hour supervision rather than prisons. And that's where we ought to be spending our money. That's where we ought to be insisting. I'm sorry, Jay, I really do appreciate your call.
Oh, I'm still here.
I get kind of heated over the apparent solutions that we know. Jawanza Kunjufu, who is an educational consultant and a teacher, came out of the public school system in Chicago. He has been writing about endangered black boys for more than two decades. Dr. Naeem Akbar, another scholar. We have scholars all over the place who have presented us educational solutions for black children. But you know what? We let our school boards decide something different, something which is to the disadvantage of black children.
You know, I was speaking to, I can't remember what show I was on, so please forgive me, but one of the hosts of the show I was on, and we were saying to the fact that we need more mentors in each community. I think it was someone from Detroit, if I remember, because he said they had I can't remember, 1,000, but they needed 4,000, okay, mentors out there to give the young kids, especially the ones that are fatherless, someone that they can talk to and relate to, as far as putting that belief factor in them that they can become someone successful in society, that there is a different route than just the gang route or end up being a drug pusher. It's sad to say, but as a young black man, the only way they see out is entertainment. They forgot about our mm-hmm. black doctors, our black lawyers. Okay.
Well, you know, the thing is,
we have more talent than that. It's been proven throughout history.
Everybody, I wanted to be Nancy Wilson when I was in high school. All I wanted was a glass of some ice and a good scotch in it, a cigarette, and sit on a piano and sing Nancy Wilson tunes. But I also wanted to be a bioethicist. I also wanted to be a lawyer. I also wanted to be a brain surgeon. You know, so our children, they want to be rappers. But, you know, they also need to learn, you're right, and they can do both.
Well, see, what you're saying is that we had dreams. We had dreams, and they're not dreaming.
Yes.
You know, Janice,
and we do, don't minimize it. We do have children who have dreams.
Exactly.
But one of the things is that we've got to do is make sure that we have the armor so that people aren't out there killing their dreams.
You know, Janice, earlier today, we got into this bit about public education, and these people that you have named, all the people that I have trouble pronouncing their name.
you want me to be another one?
All of them. You know so many of them with names that I have a serious problem with pronouncing. And I would venture that most of them began with public education. And that seems to be lost in this argument about, you know, the advantages of a public education. Education is not, there should be no price tag on it. There is no price tag on it in other places.
We also, Alpha, talked about history. And one of the things, Jay, you grew up in the U.S., right?
Yes, of course. New Jersey.
Okay. One of the things that people discount in terms of, as we talk about this whole notion of reconstructing our communities, is that my parents only had public education available to them up to the eighth grade. And that was true, and Don will tell you, that was true across this country, that black children, there were black segregated schools, black public segregated public schools, and most of those public school systems only provided education up to the eighth grade. One of the reasons why I know everybody in the United States who happens to be black is because my parents had to go to boarding school in order to finish high school. So they met, and there were only like four or five boarding schools in the South, and they met all these people. People forget about that in terms of Don, in terms of restitution. People forget about, I am a product of segregated schools until I was in the eighth grade, and I am a graduate of the Sloan School of Management at MIT and Boston College Law School. So let's not forget the historical landscape under which so many of these problems were propagated. You know, we get in front of these Jay, you don't have this problem in Germany, but you get in front of the school board. I have a very good friend in Palm Beach County who's on the school board. And you get in front of the school board, and they have some kind of argument about a specific curriculum or about unfairness and discipline of black children, and we forget, we get frozen about the history. And the history
right.
is so important.
Well, you know, I totally agree
I'm
with you that it all begins with education. You know, but
exactly.
you know, here's the question. Do we have to start with sending the parents back to school first?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Because
the churches have to be the parents' school.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay, well, you know, even you know, I work with the military over here in Germany, so I'm in the American. Well, I've been still in the American community, you know, the whole time I've been over here, and I used to support a lot of teenage basketball games, and you know, I supported,
uh-huh.
you know, and I had business in mind when I was doing it, and I can remember the first one I went to, one of the coaches had asked me to support. I think it was 12 to 14 was the age group. And I said, wow, well, there'll be a lot of parents out there. And I'm in the life insurance industry,
uh-huh.
right? I got fooled.
Uh-huh.
When I got there in the bleachers. And this was people being represented from all over Germany. And I'm thinking there are going to be a lot of parents from all over. I'm going to be on the road seeing, you know, families and whatnot. I was shocked because when I got there, the only
yeah.
thing that was in the bleachers were kids and coaches. So I went
yeah,
over and I asked
yeah.
the coach, I said, what's up? I said, where's the parents? He said, that's it. He said, when there's something that's put on for the kids in school, they feel like it's something. Now, I'm not speaking about all parents, because there are some parents that do come out, okay? But 80%, and I'd probably say 80 to 90% do not. They send the kids out the door to get rid of them. To an event
yeah,
versus
yeah.
going out and sitting in the bleachers and cheering that child on. You know, I've never been to a game and all the parents showed up. It just doesn't happen. And that's where we're failing.
You're absolutely right. I lived for many years in Brookline, Massachusetts, and it's not a black problem. The parent participation is not a black problem. Parents
right.
will participate in soccer. Parents will participate in basketball. But parents won't participate in issues having to do with the quality of education unless, in Brookline, Massachusetts, if you want to get people out to a PTA meeting, just say the town taxes are going to go up. Just say that.
Wow.
And everybody comes. Jay, I really enjoyed this conversation with you. And where are you in Germany?
I'm in a town called Heilbronn. You would probably know Heidelberg or Stuttgart better. I'm in the middle of the two.
Oh, okay. I've been to Stuttgart.
Okay, yeah. I'm 30 minutes. I'm 30 minutes from Stuttgart.
Germany is a very interesting country. I did 3 months of my internship with Daimler when I was in business school.
Okay.
And it was a very interesting country to be in as a black person. Now, tell us the time of your show and the name of it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you speaking of the special show that I'm doing or my normal show?
Your normal show.
Yeah, my normal show
so
is on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's called Millionaires in Action.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then you're having the special
yes,
on Sunday
at 7. See, this is very important because this is for Black America. That's next Sunday. It'll still be on my station. It starts at 7 p.m. Sunday the 24th. And it's titled, Who's Got Solutions for Problems in Black America? We're going to have a panel, and we definitely want people to call in because it's a our show. It's not a my show. It's an our show. And I will do it as long as, you know, it takes to get the point across because there's a lot of topics to
yeah.
cover.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to
do
the whole
bit. Well, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. I'll be back. I've got you already marked in what do you call it?
I used to do a broadcast every night, 5 days a week.
Wow.
For 2 hours.
I take my hat off to you.
At US Talk Network. And we're going to be going back to that pretty soon. As soon as I can figure out how to do that. Jay Early, thank you so much for being with us tonight here at Our Common Ground. And Alpha, you see,
take care, Jay.
People are looking for solutions.
Well, Jay,
and the thing is that they're before us. We've just got to have the courage.
Well, Janice, you're right about confrontation.
What we need to do.
You're absolutely right about that.
You know, we've got to stand in people's face and say, you know, your children are dying. We've got to tell parents, your children are dying. You can say as much as you want about how they go to school every day, but it doesn't matter. If your children don't have and understand the concepts of their personal dignity and freedom and empowerment, they are dying. They will become adults who think that the whole world, the whole purpose of living is to get a job and a car. Right, Alpha? Because they
put get some rims on.
I forgot about the rims part.
You got to have them rims. You know,
Hey, Alpha, you know, you're my favorite brother. You're my only brother, but you're my favorite brother. And I really enjoyed doing this show with you. We've got to go and get out of here. But thank you all for being with us here at Our Common Ground. We do promise you we're going to be here until every Saturday, until we get the lineup ready and do this every night of the week. And don't forget about TruthWorks Network. We have a fine library of audio documentaries. Tulsa is going up, I promise you, this week. We want to thank Don for his call and his insight. We want to thank Carol for being a thought leader, and we want to thank Jay Early for his call from Germany and asking the right questions. And for those of you who really want to re-examine the commitments that people made in the Million Man March, you can go to ourcommonground.ning.com. No, ourcommonground-talk.ning.com and get the pledge as we played it tonight. You can also get some other stuff there. Good night, all, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you all for being with us here at Our Common Ground tonight. Thanks to my co-host, Alpha of the Alpha Show, and to all of our callers. I'm Janice Graham, defiant in the truth, defiant in paving the path of our own journey, in stepping up to our own reality, faith and hope with courage, speaking truth to power and ourselves. We hope you will join us next Saturday night at Our Common Ground. It's talk that matters. I know you're hungry, kid.
As Roland said, you can only be destroyed by believing that you really are what the white world considers a nigger.
Cannot be so caught up in our temporary sense that we do not feel a permanent problem.
Humane society, go to China, see how they dine, see what they eat.
Martin Luther King had a message that was true. He had a message that was timeless. But he had a message that was not suited
to the capacity of the people who heard it.
You think about the famous families bracket, but when you think about the major capitalistic empire of American society, it's predicated upon deceit, thievery, mendacity, and ripping folk off.
Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?